people are released from Alaska's correctional facilities every day. They return communities and families around the state facing new challenges and needing to rebuild old relationships. They're seeking jobs, housing, and connections. Today on Talk of Alaska, we're discussing re-entry after prison and what's happening to help people successfully transition back to the community.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
You're listening to Talk of Alaska from Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Ann Hillman, filling in for Lori Townsend. Today, we're talking about re-entering the community after incarceration. Joining me in the studio is Bobby Outen from Family Wellness Warriors at South Central Foundation. Thanks for being here.
You're welcome.
And over Zoom, we have Doreen Scheckenberger with Partners for Progress in Anchorage. Thank you also for being here.
Thank you, Anne.
And for our listeners, do you have any questions about reentry or an experience you'd like to share? You can join the conversation by calling us at 907-550-8422 in Anchorage or statewide 1-800-478-8255. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. So before we jump straight into the conversation about reentry, I'd love to hear more about what your different organizations do. Bobby, what is Family Wellness Warriors?
Sure. We're a program in South Central Foundation, and we focus on using the strengths of Alaska Native and Native American people to heal from different types of trauma. So we're in the prison. We work with different people in our communities, first responders, combat veterans, people who have experienced different kinds of relational trauma, domestic violence, child sexual abuse. So basically, in a variety of places in the community called learning circles, we're in some of our halfway houses, our shelters, and the prisons. So
great. I definitely want to talk more about learning circles further on. And Doreen, what about Partners for Progress and the Reentry Center? What do you guys do?
Thanks, and Partners for Progress started in 1998 and wanted to help the homeless and addicted populations in Anchorage. And so they started one of the first therapeutic courts in Alaska, which is their last year was their 25th anniversary. In 2014, we started the Partners Reentry Center to help people coming out of prison because we found such a connection between addiction and homelessness and incarceration. So we serve over 1,000 people per year coming through our center. We have a full program, 4 to 6 month program that we run here at the Reentry Center, starting when a person gets out of prison until they can get permanently placed in housing in Anchorage and are employed and given support services.
48 months, so that's nearly 4 years, or I guess that is 4 years if it's 48 months. Like, so you should provide support for housing for that long?
4 to 8 months.
Oh, 4 to, okay. That makes, my apologies.
Sorry.
I was like, wow, that is a really intensive, long program.
That would be a long program. Interestingly enough, the therapeutic court programs are could be two-year programs. So,
oh, okay. So I want to make sure that our audience, our listening audience, really knows what we're talking about. So when we're talking about reentry, what exactly does that mean? Is there a specific period of time that counts as reentry? Bobby, what is reentry?
That is the question that we all ask, and people consider it different. For us, it's after somebody's been sentenced and they're coming back into the community. We don't use the word inmates, or it's a person that is justice involved or experiencing incarceration, and they're going to come back into the community, to their families. And we believe that reentry work should start the day somebody gets involved in the justice system. So it shouldn't wait for sentencing. We should be working with people immediately, helping them be healthy and well, and looking at even what has happened to them, not just what they've done.
Okay, so help starting the healing process immediately.
Immediately, yes.
Okay. I want to focus in on something that you just said, focusing not just on what they've done that's gotten them involved with the justice system, but also what's happened to them. Tell me more about that, please.
So most people, the highest rate of trauma is in those who are experiencing incarceration. And we believe, and the work that we do, is it's not just about what you've done. There's a level of what happened to you matters. There's love, there's acceptance mixed with very important accountability and personal responsibility. But until a person feels seen, heard, valued, like they matter, there's a part that's missing.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Doreen, what does, when you think about reentry, what does that look like for you? What does that mean for you?
Bobby is absolutely right. Reentry starts the day you're incarcerated. And DOC just presented at our most recent board meeting. They have a lot of programs in our facilities that help people start rebuilding their lives, including treatment programs, vocational training programs, computer programs. So it really starts there. And so does that connection with programs on the outside that can help you when you're released, such as Partners for Progress and South Central Foundation. We have the 8 reentry coalitions around the state that help people who are released. CITC has programming in their recovery services that help people when they're released. There's NeighborWorks. So there are a lot of programs that are here to help people, and that connection begins inside. We don't wait for people to get released. We go in and start that relationship early on. And statistics show that, you know, you have better outcomes when you do that. It's that connection, that human connection, like Bobby said, of people who care and people who treat you like a human being. So it usually begins 90 days from release. Partners has reentry planners that works inside of our facilities. We have one at Goose Creek, one at Palmer Correctional, and one here at the Anchorage Correctional Complex. So who are working with people who are usually 90 days from release to set up services and set them up with an outside organization that they can release to. So they have somewhere to go. Having some place to go is hugely important. Most of the people that we see here at Partners Reentry Center are homeless, justice-involved individuals with trauma, like Bobby said also, and they need a lot of assistance to get back on their feet and reintegrate into our communities in a healthy way. And so that's what we aim to do here at Partners is be that service for them, be that support for them, and walk through reentry with them.
And so when you say connect them with a service that they can release to, do you mean like housing? Do you mean supportive housing? What does that include?
Absolutely. So here at Partners, since most of the people that come to us are homeless, we have a pretty robust housing program called First Week Out. We house people the very first day they're released and assess them here at Partners to see whether they might need further treatment, which classes they might need. We have a assortment of classes here at Partners to help people.
What kind of classes?
Find jobs. Oh, our classes are, we have a lot of them. We have resume building. We have workplace behavior. We have, how to get a job, how to keep a job. We have financial literacy. We have computer literacy. So just a number of different classes to help people just get on their feet and get stable. So that usually month one and two here of our 4 to 6 month program is stabilizing an individual, getting helping them to get all of their identification, maybe birth certificates, to help them sign up for different services they might be eligible for, to get them housed. So we house people for 4 to 6 months. And then by the third month, they're usually fully employed. And then we work with them on becoming independent. So by the fifth or sixth month, they're paying their own rent and they're paying their own bills and they're independent and then graduate from our program. Month five or six is our permanent placement. Those are our permanent placement months. We will help a person find a permanent home or apartment and pay that first month's rent for them.
Okay. Bobby, what is Family Wellness Warriors also connects with folks before they're ever released?
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what that program looks like?
Sure. We have two programs in Highland Mountain Correctional Center for the women. One is a pilot program called RAW, Restricted Activity Wing, and it's the first of its kind in the state. And so it kind of replaces punitive segregation. And what it does is they live in a communal setting. And instead of having punitive segregation, we're providing learning circles like boundaries, meditation, mindfulness. And so they're developing relationships instead of being segregated. So, and then we have a full-time therapeutic community. It is a year long. It's known as Nuiju Healing Place. Nuiju was actually gifted to us from a tribal leader, John Ross, and it means returning to our true selves. And that is a therapeutic community where there are coordinator positions. The women, like I said, we don't say inmates. Mm-hmm. We will say residents or participants in our program. And so the coordinators are mentors and
who are also incarcerated.
Mm-hmm, they okay. are incarcerated, yes. We have two full-time staff in there working with them. And so 20 women who want to look at what does a healthy relationship look like, healing from trauma, again, that safe place where what happened to them matters, but also that accountability and personal responsibility. So it's designed to be a year-long program, but of course, if you're being released prior to that, you know, sometimes it's shorter. But it is a place for them to learn and experience healthy relationships.
So with the RAW program, you said it's a pilot program. How
yes.
long has it been going on, and what was the process like to create something like that as an alternative to segregation?
Yeah, so we started with the therapeutic community in Highland Mountain, and then the superintendent was, you know, dreaming and envisioning something different where people could start healing in, you know, the place that's usually the most isolated. And I would say segregation is a place, you know, where people are experience additional trauma, I guess, you know, isolation and loneliness and wanting people to have that healthy relationship opportunity. So he just basically proposed it, and we started brainstorming and daydreaming and thought, let's give it a try. It's been almost a year that we've been doing that. It's optional. Women can choose. And so it's been very, very successful.
And is it open to the entire population, the entire community who's there? Or are you only working with Alaska Native people?
It is open to anybody that would be in punitive segregation. It's open, and as is the therapeutic community. But the foundation of the program is built on Alaska Native and Native American values, and that is the strength of the program, the beauty of the program. But anybody who wants to understand those values and use those in their life can apply. There's an application process.
Oh. What does the application process look like?
So it's fairly extensive. You feel like, why do you want to change? Where are you at in your life? That you are you ready to make? You know, do you understand what a therapeutic community is? It's early morning. It's late night. It's homework. It's accountability. It's hard work, and so basically going through what is the program, and then making sure that they're in the right place in their life to do the work. So they sit down and get interviewed with our staff, and then there's a 90-day probationary period. So they have to demonstrate that they're really willing to do the hard work.
Mm-hmm. And you talked a little bit about, like, it's classes, it's homework. Is the feel of the community different? Like, what are the interactions between folks like?
So I actually brought a little book of, because the women designed this book just last week. And, you know, they share their highlights. And in one of my favorite things that they were sharing last week is their excitement at mentoring some of the new women and watching the women make progress. And so the topics, you know, are varied. They're healthy relationships or addiction, substance recovery, lots of learning circles, boundaries, anger, and they get to journey with one another. And I totally forgot what the question was. Sorry. I was so excited by the women love what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And they have, you know, they believe in one another and they encourage one another. It's a place of hope where they can truly see that they can live life differently.
That sounds like a beautiful experience for everyone involved.
Yeah.
Doreen, when Partners for Progress works with folks before they're leaving, it sounds like you're focused kind of on the things that build off of, like Family Wellness Warriors works a lot with the internal strength and hope and relationship building. And you all do a lot more of the kind of, okay, how do we reconnect with the community on the outside? Am I understanding that correctly?
Sure. I do want to mention that we all work together. You know, no one agency can do it all. So we have had a long relationship with South Central Foundation. They actually have an office down mm-hmm. here at our reentry center in downtown Anchorage.
Very cool.
And also CITC Recovery Services has an office down here at our reentry center. So we all work together for all of our participants. South Central Foundation brings a wealth of educational classes that are culturally based, like Bobby says. One of our most popular ones down here at the center is the Natia Sukan Sober Support Group that South Central Foundation hosts, but they also do anger management. We also have behavioral classes down here, such as MRT, Moral Recognition Therapy, that our participants go through. So it's a real suite of services, mm-hmm. you know, by a number of different organizations to help people in their reentry process.
What's MRT?
MRT is Moral Recognition Therapy. And it was actually developed years ago as a inside institutional behavioral modification program. It addresses thinking errors, you know, the way we think, and whether it be positive or negative, and helps people kind of turn around the way they think and to think more positive and to have empathy and to think of consequences. So it's a behavioral modification program. So I think it's a 8 to 10 week program. We teach it down here at Partners. Other organizations teach it as well. I know CITC teaches it also.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Some of the other things we focus on down here are, you know, our two big areas are housing and employment and training. So, you know, somebody who's coming out of incarceration, they have to have somewhere to go, and you can't work. You almost can't do anything if you don't have a roof over your head. So housing is really important. We use a number of transitional housers throughout Anchorage, and they're sober housing. So each of the housers have their own programs running within their facilities. So that's why one of the eligibility requirements for our program is that people, you know, have to pass a UA. They have to be in recovery, because we can't place somebody who's not in recovery in any of our sober housing facilities. It would jeopardize, you know, the other folks that are there trying to, you know, get on their feet and change their lives. So employment and training is hugely important. You know, we find that a lot of the people that are coming out of incarceration, you know, need some kind of training and help to gain employment and then to keep employment. So that's a big focus here also at Partners.
Yeah, I saw on your website that you list that more than 1,600 employers are willing to work with you and support people who are reentering.
That's a cumulative number.
Okay.
At any given time, I mean, we work with hundreds of different employers across Anchorage, and then landlords too. You know, those willing to provide transitional housing for people coming out of incarceration. Employment is hugely important. You know, people really need to have purpose when they get out. They need something to come out to. You know, they need a welcoming community who understands. And you know, we were talking earlier before the show started. You wanted to know why we should all care, and it's that, you know, people coming out of incarceration aren't just those people. There are family, you know, there are friends. If you ask anybody, I'm sure they know somebody who's been incarcerated or who has struggled with drugs and or alcohol. And these are our community members, and they affect all of us, you know, jobs, our state budget. You can look at the state budget for the Department of Corrections. It was, you know, $407 million, I think, last year. I mean, it's incarceration costs all of us, but successful positive reentry into our communities benefits all of us, and the, you know, the, we need to invest in this.
And maybe some of our listeners have some stories of successfully reentering the community. Do you have ideas of what works? What worked for you? Let us know by joining the conversation. You can call us statewide at 1-800-478-8255. You can also call us from Anchorage at 907-550-8422 or email us at talk@alaskapublic.org. So, I'm really glad that you got into all of the reasons why people should really care about this. Do you feel like attitudes in general in the community around reentry are shifting? Like, are people, I know that a lot of folks in the past have said that one of the biggest barriers to coming back is just, they feel really stigmatized. They feel like they're always seen as just one action that they did in the past in their criminal history and not seen as a whole person. Do you feel like that attitude is shifting within Anchorage or the wider Alaska community, Doreen or Bobby? Doreen?
Sure, I do. I mean, I've seen it. I've been doing this work since 2006, since 2014 with Partners for Progress. And, you know, back when we started, nobody really was doing reentry. I mean, there are organizations helping people coming out of incarceration, but nobody, you know, really put a label on it. And I'm not so much for labels. Mm-hmm. To me, this is just helping people. You know, what we do is just helping people. I mean, we're all people. But there used to be a lot worse stigma regarding people with people who have been justice involved. You know, you've heard of Not in My Backyard. Mm-hmm. I remember when we started back in 2014, there was very few transitional living houses in Anchorage, sober housing for previously incarcerated individuals. And today, because people see the benefit of it, because they know that people who are releasing need to go somewhere and need to be given a chance, everybody deserves a second chance. We have, you know, a lot more housing options than we ever used to. So that's a real positive thing. And our state budgets increased for reentry services. That's positive. That shows a trend that people are understanding this more and accepting this more. And people know that this is what we have to do. Otherwise, you're gonna our recidivism rate is still over 60%. You know, it's almost two-thirds of people who get out are going back within 3 years. You know, that's horrible. And it's gonna take all of us to change that. But I do see it. I do see it changing. The recidivism rates dropped since I started working in the field. It was up over 67% at one point a few years back, and it's down now around 62%, I think.
Okay. Is it understood what's led to that drop?
I don't know if they've looked at you know exactly why the recidivism rate has dropped. That's a hard word to say. But the Alaska Criminal Justice Data Commission is looking at that. They're looking at all reentry programs across the state for effectiveness and services they provide. I think that definitely has something to do with it. Programs such as Partners Reentry Center and the South Central Foundation and CITC and the Alaska Reentry Coalition Network. We've got eight reentry coalitions around the state. I think that does have a lot to do with it.
Raising awareness, definitely. But Bobby, have you seen changes in attitudes towards people who are justice involved?
Yes, I think we're beginning the change. We're at the very first start of it. We had a team in Juneau last week and have been talking with the Department of Corrections about programming out at Palmer Correctional. And it feels like there's a strong shift legislatively, community, Department of Corrections at restorative justice instead of punitive justice. And seeing the value in treating a human like a human, they're a person. And historically, we have had some extreme barrier crime. You know, for people to get employment when they came out, it was almost impossible to get housing. I agree with Doreen that the way we work together is pretty close and pretty tight. So I know when somebody's getting out, if they need housing, I know who to call. Having an office down at Partners for Progress has been really powerful. One of our employees that leads a circle down there last week had 17 in his circle. And so the way we are doing things together, I think, is stronger than ever. And before it was in pockets, and now we're like, we need to do this. I think the right people are listening, and the right changes are happening. And more, a lot more work needs to happen. But we're starting.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and then we will be back with more of our conversation around reentry in Alaska. Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. Today, we're talking about reentry in Alaska, what it's like to leave the criminal justice system and rejoin the community. My guests today are Bobby Outten with Family Wellness Warriors at South Central Foundation, and Doreen Checkenberger with the Partners for Progress Reentry Center in Anchorage. Thank you again both for being here. And we are taking calls. Please join us, join the conversation. The number is 907-550-8422 in Anchorage and 1-800-478-825 statewide. And we'll go ahead and take our first caller. We have Jenny from Juneau. Thank you for calling. Welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just wanted to call and give praise for having reentry services and reducing recidivism. I am a person in long-term recovery. I will have 7 years clean of opiates and prescription medications on the 7th of February.
Oh, that's awesome. Congrats.
Thank you. And I'm also a person that was formerly incarcerated. I spent 13 years, four felonies in the system. And I wanted to give a big shout out to Karen Nelson and Julie Douglas and Christina Love and the Haven House staff for opening the transitional home for women in Juneau that helped me be a better and more productive member of the community of Juneau, as well as the Juneau Reentry Coalition here, because living in that transitional home and having that open was the step that I needed to be better into the community and stop going back into the prison.
That's fantastic. Can you tell me a little bit about what was it about that transitional home that got you to a place where you felt like you could be part of the community again?
Because it helped me overcome those women that were there and helped me in my journey, helped me realize that I could be a productive member of the community and gave me the strength to do so. And I know that a lot of places like to judge people that have been incarcerated and they're not subject to change. Change is a hard thing for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And just having that support and having people behind you and bouncing ideas off of, and knowing that you don't have to do it alone, that you're that there's a path there and there's people that are leading that path and lighting that path for others to follow.
It's powerful.
Yeah, that sounds like a really beautiful experience. Thank you so much for sharing it.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Have a good day. I think what Jenny just said was incredibly powerful, because it is so much about connections and support and being with other people. Is within the work that you're doing, have you all had that experience of kind of seeing someone's, I don't know, perspective change because of human relationships and connections?
I think human relationships and connections is what gives people hope and courage. And maybe even when they're not believing in themselves, somebody else sees something. I was talking with Chet this morning. I was just looking it up, you know, because I'm like, what is it that you do down at the Learning Circle that so many people are coming? And, you know, he said, walking through the emotions of the reentry process that others don't understand, meaning someone who's been there, someone who gets it, and you don't even have to explain what's so difficult. I remember we always encourage people the day they get out, be in our office. We have a little reentry bag for them. We sit down, we go over our Learning Circle schedule. Here's our trainings, here's the things that you can be involved in, and they've seen us on the inside, so they know us. And I remember one of the guys that said just the overwhelming, he had a horrible headache and trying to do the bus schedule and all of the noise and all that was happening in the community was so overwhelming. Well, for someone who's been in reentry, you don't have to explain what that first day is like. He's explaining it to me, but it really makes a big difference when somebody can walk alongside you and they get it. You know, for me, this is personal. I have family that has been, you know, in justice involved and been incarcerated. And they had family believing in them and supporting them when they were coming out. Not everyone has that. And so that community, if we want our communities to be healthy, if we want our families to be healthy, if we want to make a difference in Alaska, we have to be working with those that are incarcerated, those that need to stop the cycle. We all repeat cycles, and maybe not the same as somebody else, but cycles repeat, and we have to be able to interrupt that. And people who get it, the people who rallied around her, I love that she gave him a shout out and mm-hmm. said, "You changed my life."
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those actually were all three names that I've heard a lot of people say
yeah.
have changed lives down in Juneau.
It's awesome. And congratulations on 7 years. I think she said February 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right around the corner.
That's it's incredibly exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is connecting people pretty quickly with like supportive sober communities pretty important for successful reentry? I know that, Doreen, you mentioned that that's a lot of kind of the housing that you help people look for.
It is. It's hugely important. And, you know, we always say connection is the opposite of addiction. You know, some people would say sobriety is the opposite of addiction, but it really is connection, because when you're, you know, struggling with a substance use disorder and possibly homeless and, you know, coming out of incarceration, you can be really disconnected. So connection really is what you need, what you want. And that's what we try to help with here at Partners, starting with our groups and our classes and employment and housing. You know, it's that sense of belonging. I'm so sorry, I forgot your question again.
We're just talking about the importance of connection.
Just deep in thought here.
Are there?
I do want to say congratulations to the lady in Juneau. That's wonderful. 7 years. And a shout out to True North Recovery, another reentry service organization, treatment organization in the Mat-Su, that does a lot of this work also.
All right. So one thing that kind of popped up earlier before the break was, Bobby, you mentioned restorative justice.
Yes.
What does that mean exactly?
Well, it means that a person can be what we use, nuiju, return to their true selves, and that we create opportunity for people to be able to have, whether you call it a second chance or opportunity to be part of our community, instead of it being permanently punitive on what they did. And again, there's always that accountability and responsibility piece, but it's believing that somebody can be different, do life different. I wanted to share a really quick story that I think is a great example of the importance of relationship. And one of our staff was getting ready to go in. They were in the parking lot at Highland Mountain Correctional, and they were getting ready to go in to lead for the day. And there was a man in the parking lot that said, "Have you heard about this program, and do you know anything about it?" And it was a father of one of the residents and women. And he said, his words were that she's so open, honest, and she's sharing with me and she's connecting. She's never done that before. It's like watching a miracle. And so even family that are seeing, once somebody understands the importance of relationship and empathy and connecting, that it can actually connect out with family that have never experienced them that way. So she's still, you know, on the inside, as we say, he's on the outside, but connection is happening, which will make reentry all the more powerful.
Mm-hmm. So, and it also feels like that's just an additional motivation to start healing, because you have a sense of the connections and the relationships that you can go out to.
Well, the restorative piece can be in your own family, right? In your own heart, your own life. So it's restorative is a lot more than somebody being out in the community, getting a job or being on their own. It's healing throughout their, it's intergenerational.
I'd like to go back to the phones. We have Susan from Bethel.
Good morning. Thanks for this topic. I think it's really important, and also to get the community involved. I really appreciate that prior caller sharing about what worked for her, because that's what's going to help you get answers. Talk to people that have been successful in staying with better choices in their life. And I worked in corrections as a department, as a program coordinator, in charge of rehab programs, educational programs, what have you. And I retired from that 2013, but I worked there for more than a decade, and I went through several changes of different governors and their philosophies and all that. And I saw what worked and what doesn't work, and we really can't really take a cookie-cutter approach. And those were frustrating times for me working there, because I had primarily a native culture and all that. I wanted things to be relevant to them. And when you do a cookie-cutter statewide approach of no more, no less, these are the programs and that's it, that to me was frustrating. I really think working individually with the people and really strong reentry program is one that really invites and involves the community. You know, we saw on statewide news last week that big drug bust, and people getting out of jail were actually recruited to be part of that, and now they're back in trouble again. So if you don't have a reentry program, you've got people on the other side waiting for them to mess up again. So the reality is most of the people will be released, and we need to work with them, welcome in, embrace them, and look at what works for the people that have no longer landed in trouble. Thank you.
Thank you for calling. Any response to Susan? Doreen?
We absolutely need programs to help people coming out of incarceration. I just want to add to the, you know, intergenerational effect incarceration and addiction and trauma, you know, can have on families and our people here in Alaska, especially Alaska Native people. You know, they make up around 16%. We make up around 16% of the general population. Alaska Natives do, and almost 40% of the incarcerated population. So really overrepresented in our prisons. And I want to share a story also from our reentry center here. A few years back, we had a gentleman here, an elder, Alaska Native elder here in our program. At the same time, his son and his grandson were also in our program. And it really opened our eyes here at Partners to the long-term and intergenerational effects that, you know, incarceration and substance use disorder have on people. And there was a lot of trauma there, but the beauty of it is that they were together going through this program and connected and went through some of the same classes here at Partners. And, you know, I think that, you know, that reconnection with each other, with their family, was a big part of their success in our program. But it really does show what an issue this is here in Alaska, and that there still is a lot of work to do, like Bobby said.
Yeah, and if I could speak to that just a little bit, the intergenerational piece, as an Anishinaabe woman myself, as you know, for me, my story is one of domestic violence and figuring out how to come out of that. And it is true, Alaska Native American people are overrepresented. In Highland Mountain, 50% of the population are Alaska Native women, and they're 9% of the state. So while that's true, it's not an Alaska Native American issue. It is a human issue. And for women like me, who have experienced domestic violence, 90% of Alaska Native American women who experience that is from a non-Native partner. And so it's a human, you know, condition issue, but we are overrepresented. And so my favorite part of the Nuiju Healing Place is it was not a program designed for Alaska Native American people. It was us taking charge and designing it and saying, this is what we need, and this is how our culture can be a part of healing. And so, like, really taking charge of, we want things to be different, we can make things different for ourselves. And so while it's, people are overrepresented in Alaska, I think they hold their answers, you know, for their own selves. And I'm watching that happen. It's powerful.
Thank you. Thank you for those sentiments. I want to go to an email that we received from Jonathan, who is listening to the show and says, I think the sentiment is very nice, but extraordinarily naive. Many studies have shown that abstinence recovery programs are not effective and work for only a limited number of people. Is that true?
What was the, can you read the last part?
that abstinence recovery program, basically recovery programs that don't involve any use of any substances, are ineffective and only work for very few people.
I'm not sure that all those in reentry have addiction issues that we're talking about. So, and abstinence is when you're incarcerated is supposed to be, you know, part of the process. But that's definitely not our focus, at least in what we do. If a person wants to be in recovery, and addiction is part of what got them incarcerated, and they feel like that needs to be part of their journey, recovery journey, then absolutely we have programs like what Doreen talked about down downtown Natia Sukan. That's a recovery program. But these programs aren't talking about abstinence. They're talking about what does a person need in reentry. And that's different for everyone. Some it's housing, some it's a job, some it's emotional connection.
Okay. And Doreen, do you feel like...
I agree with that. Not all of our participants that come to us for services need treatment or have a problem with substance use. They're all different. And I like what the lady said about, you know, not being a cookie cutter program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody's different coming out and they have different needs. There are a lot of barriers that are... you know, justice-involved people encounter. And we really try to work through those barriers with them. We go to Juneau also and advocate for things like limited driver's licenses for people who graduate certain programs, more funding for recovery and things like that. So it is really based on what the person needs when they're coming out, which will, you know, tell what services that they're signed up for.
All right. We need to take another quick break. And then when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about some of those barriers. And welcome back to Talk of Alaska, where we are talking about reentry. Another issue that Jonathan brought up over email is the housing issue. And we know that housing is a huge problem throughout Anchorage. Like, there's a limited amount of affordable housing. His concern is that it's a huge barrier to find people housing if they have criminal convictions. And also, people get into these programs, but then they don't complete them, is what his personal experience has seen. Doreen, housing is a huge problem in Anchorage. Are you seeing people successfully finish programs and get into long-term housing? Or once they finish the few months that you can provide, what happens?
Partners has done one study, a mini recidivism study, where we looked 3 years out after a person left our program, and we found that those who completed our program 3 years from that date had around a 27% recidivism rate versus those that did not fully complete our program was about 48%, I think. So, you know, any programming is better. Any assistance and support and programming is better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wish we could say that we absolutely know of the, you know, 1,004 people that we helped last year that they've not recidivated. We just can't say that. And we don't have the funding to follow people,
mm-hmm.
you know, after our program. But, you know, regarding the housing shortage, Jonathan's absolutely right. I mean, there's an absolute housing shortage in Anchorage, especially for justice-involved and homeless individuals. Another program we have here at Partners is a homeless placement program for people who don't quite fit into our reentry program. So it's you know, even if a person doesn't qualify for reentry services through the center here, we don't turn people away. We find some way to help them, or we connect them with another agency that can help them. Housing is a, you know, we meet with potential housers all the time, and we're always trying to work with different organizations and landlords in Anchorage to find more transitional housing. But it's tough. It really is a struggle to find affordable and quality housing. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the barriers is that I see that we don't have, per se, housing standards, transitional housing standards or sober housing standards, you know, in Alaska. Other states do. There's a level of quality of service that the transitional housers have to have, or sober support housers have to have in other states to be able to meet the criteria to be a transitional housing provider. So we've developed our own here at Partners, and we will not place somebody in a facility that is below that standard of quality that we've set. You know, mm-hmm. anybody coming out of incarceration, any of us deserve a quality place to live, mm-hmm. a clean place, you know, a nice place to live. And unfortunately, we've seen otherwise in certain situations here in Anchorage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Another thing I want to get to before we wrap up in a couple minutes is both of you guys have touched a little bit on going down to Juneau and talking to legislators. Are there any specific policies or changes that either of you are advocating for that would help justice-involved people reenter the community successfully?
I'd like to speak to that just shortly. For the past year, and South Central Foundation may have been involved in this too, we've been involved with the digital equity mm-hmm. project here in Alaska that will hopefully bring federal funds to Alaska to help different populations with more access to internet and to computers. One of those populations are people incarcerated. They qualify as an underserved population as far as digital equity goes. Alaska just submitted the digital equity plan to the federal government, calling for more access to internet for our prisons, some kind of secure access so that there could be more higher education, more treatment. I know that at Highland right now in Goose Creek, they have a pilot tablet project going on. And so I really see that as a future, a huge future benefit for preparing our incarcerated individuals to release and to be more successful once they're released.
Thank you, Doreen.
Yeah, sorry. So with the digital, I think it's really important that, and we did look at that and support that for those who come from rural communities who don't have the ability for family members to visit or to keep that connection, having increased internet and even iPads. They have specific iPads, right, that are safe for those that are incarcerated, but to be able to have visitation or education and continue learning. So definitely on the digital and things, you know, that we're exploring and continuing to watch, and we'll see, is the decreasing the barrier crime so that people can have increased access to jobs and increasing housing, especially for some of the more difficult cases involving sex offenses.
All right.
I think another thing that could help would be to take a look at, you know, our statutes, our crimes, and maybe look at other states who have expungement laws for some of our crimes. And maybe after 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, certain crimes can come off a person's criminal record. You know, having a criminal record is just a huge barrier in everything from housing to employment, to getting a loan, to going to school.
It's a big, it's a big block.
It's huge. It's huge.
Thank you for bringing that up, Doreen. We actually have to wrap up the show now. I really wanted to thank you and Bobby both for being here on Talk of Alaska today. Our producer is Madeline Rose. Chris Hyde is the audio engineer. I'm your host, Ann Hillman. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.